Okay, I'm just going to start talking about stuff since we're going to post it anyway. Have you taken a look at the website in the last few days, Mel?
My goodness, yes. Thank you for adding the monkeypox tracker for shits and giggles.
Oh, I wish I didn't have to add it. Forever for Lena, who's here, and Anastasia. It is Crystal speaking from Project Canary. But oddly, my face is also here, which is recording on the laptop. So this is actually Crystal speaking, although my face is here. I went through this week and I've got two people now that are helping with sort of data input, specifically with regards to the wastewater stuff, because I'm not as familiar with that sort of data. So I have a couple people that have given me sort of outlines on how to read wastewater surveillance stuff. What are the data limitations? So I'm sort of trying to put together limitations for the data before we let people export it, just so they know what they're working with. But we've got all the provincial wastewater data up now from September 2020 through to now, in sort of chronological data, so people can see what happened in 2022, Mel. When you look at the wastewater surveillance, do you see a theme there?
It's called a gradual increase. Is that how you, is that the scientific term?
Well,
Because it's looking pretty scary, I have to say.
So, and this is the purpose of the way that they've presented the data, right? And we've talked about this before, is that typically when they're looking at something like wastewater, or they've even been looking at hospitalizations or death rates, they're either compressing the axis so that you only see sort of the last 6 months so that it looks like relatively good compared to the other time periods, or they're honestly, in those situation reports, they take like just the most random values and compare to it. They're like, well, it's relatively lower than at this month date, which at this rate it was. But when you put it all together, so if anybody hasn't looked in the last couple days, we've put all the provincial wastewater data for the Metro Vancouver region, which is the only one we have in BC. That's the only wastewater data access we have so far. At that bchospitaldata.com under the wastewater surveillance tab. For the five districts they've used, you can clearly see that through tracking 2020 and 2021, that there were, yes, fluctuating rates of wastewater. But then in 2022, in January, the shit explodes literally with COVID, and it has not stopped. And even relatively, when you're looking, where we're at right now is still like way higher than anywhere we were at in 2020 and 2021.
And I think our listeners need to understand, like, the reason why we can see this data and it's not obfuscated like the rest of the data is because this is federal data.
No,
This
this
is fe
isn't, Mel.
this isn't federal
This
data.
shit is all of BC's data. This is all of their data just put together in one place so people can actually see what it says. All of this is provincial health data.
But yet no one's talking about it. No one's.
Because nobody can see it like this. That's why I made the website, right? Is that people think that when it's given relative comparisons, that's what they're doing, right? That's the way that they are spinning that narrative, is to say it's better than it was at whatever this point. But even compared to the 2 years before, and now that we know that the vaccines are not going to be as effective, that we have real problems, right?
A lot of people aren't getting their fourth booster because what did Dr. Bonnie Henry say in the news article that we're just not going to get it?
Oh,
Like, it's not
I'm hearing such
happening.
interesting things. Yeah, I saw a post somewhere. I don't remember where it was. I saw some text about a meeting. Yeah, that today essentially she said something like, people just don't need the fourth dose. Which
I
we
don't
this is not new
understand.
behavior though, Mel. She said this with the
No.
third dose. She said this with the second dose. This is the same behavior. She has literally taken the same approach every time, except we get less and less data each time. There has been no adaptation or sort of recognition of the things that have gone wrong. That's been her thing.
Yeah, I mean, see the post on Twitter, that kid who's 26 and he flew to Quebec and he got his fourth booster. Like, he had to walk in to another province to get his booster. He's from BC.
Well, it's just, yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to the way things are happening right now. We saw that the airports for federal flights now have pulled the testing, the random testing rate for the vaccinated travelers. And I don't think any of us think, like, how is this going to get better? And this is where the sort of website comes in, and the BC hospital data is that our healthcare systems are, this is the lagging indicators, right? Here we go. Like, we said that this was going to happen with staffing and resources, and this is what is happening. And we both know that this isn't going to go away in the next 6 to 12 months. This is only going to get worse, right? We saw, you know, this week, since we talked last week, that so staff talking about how there's only a single lab technician doing the blood stuff in Vernon Jubilee Hospital. You know, Elkford Health Center, that they have been often closed due to limited staff. And Interior Health is posting that people should phone ahead for emergencies. Mel.
I'm like totally frazzled this week because my family had like an emergency health thing happen. Right?
Yeah.
Like, this is the state of our province right now, and it's terrifying.
Well, and we see that, you know, in Kelowna, at Kelowna General Hospital, that they're talking about the fallouts from those staffing challenges, that the planned and urgent inpatient chemotherapy may not be offered anymore. KGH, we've talked about that, right? 100 Mile House having staffing shortages and closures, Port McNeil, Kamloops, and the Royal Inland. Interior Health, especially right now, is already collapsing, but this is just, these are the rural areas. Northern Health, we're not even probably tracking anything, and their hours were already so limited that it's hard for them to lose functioning now because they had so not very much to start with. But it is going to hit the bigger areas, Mel, right?
Is that when people will get noisy about our collapsing health system?
Vancouver General Hospital, right? When it's Vancouver General Hospital that people are regularly waiting 9 hours at. Or people are dying in the waiting room, in the emergency room, right? But people are already dying. This is the frustrating part, and why I made the website, right, is that that's just waiting for privileged people to pay attention. People are already dying. Our disabled are dying. Our elderly are dying. They're dying when they're even accessing care in the hospital right now because they're catching COVID.
Yep, over 300 plus deaths in the month of May.
Right.
And 88 plus deaths per week right now. Yeah. Where are all these people? Like, my goodness, we're losing faster than people are being born here in BC.
Right, and we've seen nothing but deaths, you know, from April 2nd to May 14th, all we did was see increases. We saw the past week, 30-day all-cause go from 11 per week, right, to 59 at the height in the mid-May. We're still at 43. That's a lot of people, right? And you add that to the illicit drug deaths. You add that to the excess deaths that we know that they're not tracking, which BC's, you know, the data now is just, it's outrageous how different the data in BC appears.
You think they would realize that sooner or later, the numbers will never lie? People would figure it out.
But that's why they take the numbers, Mel. Right? Or they do what they're doing, which is, again, all this data is their data and available on various websites. But it took me like 48 hours to gather all this stuff and like make the website and do all that stuff. And how ableist is that?
Yeah.
Right? To even be able to access and understand our healthcare system, or whether you're even going to be safe that you have to be willing to put that many hours in to even understand the basics.
What normal person would do that?
Right. And we have no idea the turnover of our sort of our consults and all those things, right? Like, Dix is out there very specifically right now talking about how they did all these extra things in 2021 Absolutely, they did, because they pushed that surgical renewal in BC. They burnt out all their workers, and all those workers are gone now, right?
And who's there to replace these people that are missing?
Nobody, right?
Exactly.
I'd love to see these numbers compared to next year and the year after, right? That's what they're not talking about. The wait times for people are outrageous, right? We've known people in the private chats we're in. You know, it's hard to not say that, like, they're dying and they're not getting care.
The wait time for ER at St. Paul's was 8 to 10 hours for my brother.
Yeah.
He had a medical situation this week, and due to being exposed to COVID earlier in the pandemic, he's having problems with his liver and his gallbladder.
Mm.
But 8 to 10 hours wait in the ER in an excruciating pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be the norm. And yeah. It is the norm. And we already have this is not shortages just with nursing, just with doctors, right? It's with EMS. It's with all the things down the line. You know, I'm in Alberta right now in Edmonton. And this week there was an 86-year-old woman that was mauled by multiple dogs who died while she was waiting for the ambulance because it took 30 minutes for it to get there because there were no ambulances.
And she lived less than 10 minutes away from the hospital, apparently.
Yeah. Right. And that, you know, I'm looking at the people around me and they're like, oh yeah, that's sad, but they're not recognizing what that means. What that means for our healthcare, that our healthcare is a baby, you know, it's barely 50, 60 years old. It's not going to take much to destroy it.
Is there like a psychological term for this type of cognitive dissonance, this collective?
I honestly don't know that we have an accurate term for this, because I don't know that it's ever been this. Okay, that's such a terrible thing to say, because history would laugh at us for saying that. But I don't have a good word to describe it, because I'm so overwhelmed by how many people around me don't have any recognition or ability to challenge that dissonance.
Like, I'm just wondering, like,
yeah, it's going to be bad. Like, people, again, in the last 2 weeks, I've heard of them saying in Kelowna that they're going to likely have to stop doing those inpatient chemotherapy services and state that maybe they'll refer out. But in the same week that somebody in Fraser Health has been told that their stage 4 chemotherapy has to stop because of staffing resources. So what happens when we're just not treating cancer patients? Because it seems like we're already there.
BC Ferry had to cancel like a number of sailings this weekend due to lack of people being available to man the ferries that transport people back and forth. Things are falling apart, and if people would stop pretending that everything's fine and actually work together to form constructive problem solving solutions to everything going on, it would be great. I don't know. I'm watching this in complete just mortification, but also like looking at this anthropologically speaking. Do you think the ancient Romans were aware that Rome was in decline, or the Mayans were aware that their civilization was like falling apart? Like,
I think there were people just like us, right? Fucking yelled and were like, what the fuck, bro? What are we doing? There's always those records, right? There's always people that were burned at the stake for saying, what the fuck are these idiots doing? And we very much are sort of in that place now where it seems like 80% of the population is sleepwalking, 10% are vicious wolves, and 10% of us are trying to save some freaking lives out here.
Yeah.
But
people because honestly, if people were fully aware of everything that happens to your body and the sequelae of having COVID or even long COVID from like not even from asymptomatically having it, do you think people would actually change their behaviors and like would realize that, hey, maybe we should physically stop the virus from entering our body and infecting us and like destroying our organs and our T cells and aging our DNA. Like, do you think if people were fully aware of the full consequences, had it been communicated to them clearly and how fragile everything is, do you think people would
careful? I have two thoughts to that. I have one, which is, had we done better education, absolutely, I think we could have impacted this. But two, it's, I mean, for people now, this is the hard part, Mel, and it's why we talked about it for like 18 months, was that the damage that we've been doing is not easy to undo now, right? It's going to take very sustained, directed effort. And what's hard about it is we are still fighting those in power actively, not doing that. And that's sort of where these hopefully sort of direct actions or even things like this website, what we can get people to do is part of it's educating people on what's actually happening, because they just don't even know. And we have to also be aware of our own privilege of sort of education and the scaffolding that we have to place this on, which a lot of people don't have. And they have been raised and told and believe that, don't believe the government would lie to them in this way. They've had no reason or no circumstances to think that, which we may not understand that perspective because that's just not been our experience. But for them, they've never had a reason to question that. And they continue on with that because that's been their experience. So, you know, when I do tell people things like about Clearwater, right? Like, it's going to be closed again from tomorrow, Sunday at 5 p.m. until 7 a.m. on Monday. This is the 12th closure that emergency department has had since April 2022, right? And when I tell people that, they're like, whoa, like, I had no idea. So part of it is just getting the information accessible. And BC has done a very extensive and very targeted job at disaggregating this information and making it difficult to access for the general population, and even people that want to, it still took a lot of time and effort to aggregate this data. So we have to get the information in accessible ways that people will understand the impact on themselves and on others, because this is part of why I wanted to make the BC Hospital Data website, is to bring it all together, right? Is that it's easy for them to pick these things apart and not really talk about any piece of it together. But when we look at, you know, how many hospitals are having these issues, you know, how many people are still dying from COVID, how many drug deaths are we having? You know, look at what's actually going on in 2022 with the wastewater. Maybe some people, maybe, will be led to question those answers from public health. At least I freaking hope so.
We can only hope. I mean, we can present the information, and that's the most we can do.
Well, I mean, I've tried other ways and it doesn't usually work. But I was thinking, actually, maybe we would bring up Lena if she's okay with that. If you want to give a thumbs up, Lena, if you're okay with me inviting you as a speaker. And I really hope, if I'm saying your name wrong, that you correct me as soon as you're on here. I apologize if so. In terms of, maybe let's talk then while we wait for her, about this paper. So I've tagged, or I don't even know what to call it. This is, I've put in the nest is what I hear the other people say. The tweet I made about the paper that was recently published from our public health in BC about this two-dose lengthening, which, if anybody remembers, many people were upset about and did not want to be undergoing this, and very made clearly that they didn't want to be part of some strange experiment in British Columbia. And lo and behold, Mel, what was out there? What was this paper?
Well, besides the flagrant, you know, conflict of interest and the unethical nature of unwilling participants in gambling with our lives and immunity and our future, I thought this paper was about, you know, how we are somehow the last in the world to get our fourth booster and definitely our second shot. and someone was doing a study on set effects on the populace.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So they published, well, they haven't published. Oh gosh, why is my brain blanking right now? It's not peer reviewed yet. It's preprint. It's called 2-dose SARS-CoV-2 vaccine effectiveness with mixed schedules and extended dosing intervals. Test negative design studies from British Columbia and Quebec, Canada. With authors of our very own Dr. Bonnie Henry and Mel Crashton. So this is about the decision about the vaccines that were made in British Columbia and other areas, but ones that, again, we had many issues with. And they used the data from blood testing from the citizens, essentially without consent, and there was no ethics review.
You don't say. There was no ethics review.
I want to say, what did the note I read, that it was waived for ethics review or something?
Really?
Data access was approved by White Steering Committee, and all analyses were conducted under a surveillance mandate authorized by the provincial health officer under the Public Health Act, exempt from Research Ethics Board's review under the administration of the University of British Columbia Clinical Research Ethics Boards. UBC! Oh, what a surprise to hear their name in there, Mel.
You mean the same university that gave the same individual an honorary degree?
And wrote me up for talking about all of this in 2021?
Oh. The one and the same. How interesting.
Oh. Yeah, so they published that paper. Or haven't published it yet. They put it up. So they used the data that we questioned them on and said was unethical to use without an ethics review that was waived by the public health officer who decided to do this in the first place. I don't know what to do with it. Truly, like, this woman has been and continues to be allowed to do whatever she wants and make very unsubstantiated decisions that are causing a lot of harm to intentionally ignored communities. And there is no sort of accountability whatsoever. And I wish it was just here, but it's not.
But this is how the elite insulate themselves, isn't it?
Oh, this is all the beautiful isms wrapped into one, right? We've got ableism, we've got racism, we've got classism, we've got all these things blending together into, as long as it doesn't impact me, I don't care. Because people felt inconvenienced by the pandemic changes. Many people who'd never had to sort of deal with those sorts of things before. And
welcome.
Hi.
Let me start with, how do I say your name correctly?
It's Lena.
Lena. Okay. I thought maybe we would just actually have you tell us a little bit about what you've been working on in the last little bit and what's been happening with you in BC, because you seem to get really joyful experiences and reactions from them too.
From where? From whom?
From the BC policymakers, in terms of they seem to just be ignoring everything that you've done so far. Is that about accurate?
Well, I haven't really engaged with them directly, in all honesty, because I didn't see a way to engage with them directly. You want me to talk about the two human rights complaints?
Yeah, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've so far submitted two of them. They've both been class complaints. I didn't see them as personal experiences. I saw them affecting a lot of people. And they came about from, well, the first one, I had surgery on Christmas Eve, and I came back and I kind of wrote my frustrations out about my interactions with the staff at the hospital. And how I had to fight to keep on my 95, and how ignorant aware of the differences between N95s and the blue masks, and you know, the intake clerk literally asked me to step back because I was wearing an N95 and refused to take it off. So she thought I wasn't safe enough for her wearing a 3M N95, which I thought was ridiculous. And that turned into a petition. And then I read that article with the memo that leaked from Fraser Health that essentially banned the use of N95s in hospitals, and that pissed me off. So I decided that it was a clear violation of human rights, and I remember being annoyed that no one was doing anything, that no one was saying anything. And then I took a step back and realized that I'm part of the no one, and I should be pissed off at myself. So I sat down and actually wrote it, and I submitted it, and I haven't heard anything about it. Mm-hmm. So that went in at the end of January, and we're supposed to hear back within 3 to 4 months to be told whether the tribunal will hear it. But the first one was about masks specifically. So I presume with the change in the rules that happened at the end of March, that they've grouped it along with the I don't know how many complaints that anti-vaxxers put in, and it won't be heard for at least a year. Now, after it did that, I talked to a couple of people who wrote about it in the press. I felt like they doubled down on it because they started coming out with this whole COVID isn't airborne droplet dogma bullshit in the press. He had the Patricia Daly, who wrote about it. Two employees of ECH actually wrote a letter to Nature, which isn't peer reviewed, and they kept on touting that as evidence that COVID isn't airborne. He had the BC Children's Hospital Twitter account actually come out and say, oh no, it's not it's not airborne either. And again, that pissed me off. So because there's nothing else to do, right? And I have very few resources. I'm currently only on EI. I'm just a postdoc / full-time undergrad living in residence, literally. And this is the only way I felt that I could actually say, no, this isn't okay. So I sat down, and it took me a little bit longer to write down the second one because I wanted to incorporate as much as possible in it. It got submitted at the end of March. And I haven't heard back from them on that one. It does touch upon masks, but it's only a small part of it. So I have no idea whether they will hear it or whether they will also group it with all other mask-related complaints and say we're not going to hear it for a year. Spoken to three lawyers overall at the BC Human Rights Clinic, which is independent from the tribunal, but they do offer support for people who want to file in complaints. The two that I filed in BC were the only ones that were on the other side of the argument of the anti-maskers and the anti-vaxxers, which was surprising and kind of heartbreaking. The other side is very loud, and they're very active, so that's not okay because they're wrong. Sorry, that's my opinion.
Well, I agree with your opinion. Yes. So good. We're on the same page there. I just and so every time I realize sort of the work that you've had to do and you've put forward in this, it's just, it's mind-boggling that people are not being allowed to wear their proper masks in hospitals.
It makes no sense.
It truly
it makes no sense.
We've gone from the place and they were like, oh, it's, you know, you can make your choice now. You can make your personal risk assessment. It's like, well, no, we can't. We're not allowed to wear any sort of masks. We're not allowed to have any sort of data.
You're also not told if you're going to be put in the same room with a COVID positive patient if you have to stay in hospital, right? So that's not making your own risk assessment, because their answer is, oh, you're not. I think she said, I haven't seen any data that shows that you get COVID if you're like, you know, more than 2 meters away from a COVID positive person. If you're not wearing an N95, it's insanity, right? The fact that she has not seen it, I don't know if she's expressing it this way to protect herself from legal liability. She doesn't say it doesn't exist. She says, I haven't seen it. But if she refuses to look for 2 years while spewing nonsense on TV, essentially, you know, miseducating people, if that's a word, I don't know. It's outrageous. As a cynic, the only interpretation I have for what they're doing, again, and I've read the paper that was written on Sweden, and she has said that we follow the Swedish model. Yep. You know, how Sweden has used lying and schools to seed infections into the community through schools while telling people that kids don't get it, that they don't transfer it, because they hope that they would reach herd immunity. I think this is what they're doing. So in schools and in public transportation and in hospitals where they have control, they're essentially preventing you from being able to effectively protect yourself.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm a cynic. Maybe there's an alternative interpretation, but, you know, I'd love to hear it if you have one.
I don't think at this point there is an alternative interpretation, because with the clear data we have on long COVID at this point, and we have been talking about this since it started with long COVID, because in the beginning of COVID, in March 2020, I was reading stories about dementia-like symptoms, about neurocognitive symptoms in COVID patients. That was there in March 2020. The research we have now clearly establishing the long-term effects of COVID is there, and continuing on this GBD path, which I agree, that's what I think they're doing. They've taken no sort of recognition that they've done anything else. They've said they followed the models of those people. And the real kicker is that they continue to try and hide the fact that this was their plan as the plan implodes, which is what's happening now. The plan is imploding. And
how are they hiding it? By giving her awards?
Yeah.
How?
Well, just by taking data and refusing to sort of say.
They're not monitoring. That's correct.
Nobody will go up there, you know, hiding in the sense that John Horgan's on stages right now, like cutting ribbons for new hospitals as like rural hospitals collapse. Like they're just in the stage where they think they can just pretend it's not happening. But it will get to a point that they can't.
How?
Enough people will be dead, unfortunately. Right. Again, I think people could also call me a cynic, but I think it's actually just being a student of history, is that when we don't recognize what went wrong, and that's the phase we're in, right? We have all these things to support what we're doing and say what we're doing. When we refuse to recognize that, it's usually societal failure, right?
And you spoke of cognitive dissonance a few minutes ago. The play. It's called The Rhinoceros, and it was written decades ago, and it referred to, I think it was based on Germany's experience and how they all sort of stood back and saw what the Nazis did to the Jews. And it can totally be applied to what's happening now, where I think it's a village where everybody starts turning into rhinoceri, and people keep on refusing to acknowledge their own reality and the fact that they are one at a time turning into these beasts. I don't know. I'm not. I spoke to a lady I've known for years, actually, who works here. She has long COVID symptoms. She didn't know what long COVID was. She hasn't been able to taste anything for a year and a few months. And I had to sit her down and tell her what it is and actually, you know, show her the form and say, take this to your GP and ask, you know, for a referral to long COVID clinic, because this is, you know, it's fascinating. Every time I go and pick up my mail, I have to fight with people because indoors, even though we have a mask mandate, people are not following it. And people who work in UBC here in residence, the ones who are in, because I'm in the old residence, the ones who are in the reception, nobody wears masks. And I told them yesterday, I said, people, there's about 10 people dying every day on average still. And they didn't know. They had no idea.
No, absolutely.
I'm not very positive about this. Or
I think we would have to be unwilling to see what's been happening if you are going to be positive about it, because everything I've seen leads me to believe that it's not going to get easier from here, unfortunately, especially with our medical systems, as the impact of long COVID comes, which the news is just talking about, right? They've just caught on to talking about long COVID, talking about how it's going to impair our healthcare systems while not even acknowledging or recognizing the healthcare system's unfortunately already on its knees.
The healthcare system is not buildings, it's people.
Yeah.
Yesterday, what was it, a paper or I think it was an article that spoke about 30% of teachers in the UK actually experiencing long COVID.
Yeah.
And that's because Boris Johnson, obviously, let things rip. And even then, I think the UK, BC, and Australia are the only places in the world where healthcare authorities actually didn't speak about the fact that COVID is airborne. So they didn't give all healthcare staff, for example, N95s.
Yeah. Yeah. So
even now, if you go to an NHS hospital, you see people with the baggy blues, and you have staffing issues there as well, because the nurses and the doctors and the techs and, you know, everyone's exposed to this. And I don't know how we as a society are going to survive in the short term if we're going to have brain damage surgeons and even GPs, right? If you can't, it's like, teachers and pilots and nuclear engineers and scientists. It's insanity.
Progress
and it's unfolding in real time. Yeah. Sorry, I'm gonna be quiet now because
No, I agree. I think that we're impairing our entire population and not thinking twice about it. But I'm gonna say, Gemma, what were you gonna check in about? You got your hand up there.
Hi, yeah, thank you. Lena brought up something that was really important to me. So just first off, I'm a former student in East Surrey. I just became a PWD. So I'm spending a lot of time volunteering with different orgs to kind of bring awareness and learn as much as I can about what's going on. But Lena mentioned this play called Rhinoceros. And I just wanted to say, I watched a 2002 recording of a European troupe put a production on. And I've watched it twice now, once by myself and then once with my gaming group. And it's really, I think for everyone here, when you're feeling really despondent and alone, I think watching that recording can be simultaneously really empowering and really heartbreaking, because I think it's so easy. It's easy for us to see ourselves in the protagonist who is so adamant about what is right and true, while everyone around him is just kind of like really capitulating to the new normal, like the urgency of normal and the destruction that creates. So I'm super happy that someone here knows about that. And I strongly recommend that people watch it when you're feeling down. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I was gonna say that That was shared a lot. I want to say probably last year, the rhinoceros, everything about it and how much it applied to everything that was going on. So I absolutely agree. It's very interesting and relevant and necessary to sort of understand those sorts of themes right now in our society, unfortunately. I guess I'm wondering, I would love to hear, Lena and Gemma, what you, or if you have any thoughts on this paper that was released by Henry and Krajcin with the two-dose data.
I haven't read it because I saw it about an hour ago. But the one thing I did notice is that she has not declared a conflict of interest based on the fact that she actually decides how the whole vaccination program gets deployed in this province, right? Who gets what age group, and
yeah.
So I skimmed the preprint today. I've chatted with a few other folks in the threads, and we've kind of like asked each other some questions about where this consent to participate could have been obtained. Because I'll be honest, I remember doing the speak survey last year. I don't remember anything about serology, but I'll say right now, not being a former academic, I'm not a scientist or anything. I just think that it brings up a lot more questions than it answers.
Yes, I would agree. I think it sort of exemplifies the problem that we've had in British Columbia, which is this should be clear. All of this should be clear. We should be understanding where our data is, who's using what this information looks like, what's going on in the hospitals. All this stuff we're talking about should be freely and accessible, especially from a public health who says we have to make our own personal risk assessments, right? I truly believe we should have that information regardless. I believe that this paternalism and unwillingness to allow people to actually understand what's happening to keep the economy going, and because they're, I don't know what the concern is, that they'll realize they were wrong at this point, I think is the primary concern. But they keep doing it. We should have this information. It should be freely accessible. And that is sort of why I've been working on what I've been working on, and Mel and I have done this podcast for so long now, is that it's outrageous that we don't have this information. It's outrageous that you're having to write a human rights complaint about wearing a mask in a hospital.
I mean, what I also like to know is how they justify the decisions that they're making, like sticking to the 6-month rule. And the other thing, where they make changes, they don't actually announce them, right? So you have to be keeping an eye on things to figure out if they're changing something. They're doing it under, that was the word, they're being sly about it. And it shows that they shouldn't be trusted. But if they're taking a different view on, for example, boosters, right, and then other provinces or other countries, shouldn't they have to justify why, and actually justify it with data? So I'm don't understand why the people who have access to them, reporters, won't ask these questions, right? And won't keep asking the same question if they don't get an actual answer. It drives me insane, right? So when you ask a question and you get bullshit as a response, why, as a journalist, do you not say, sorry, that's not what I asked. That's what I asked. Please answer the question, and keep doing this until you actually get them to answer the damn question. I don't understand why this is not happening.
Gemma, what do you think?
Yeah, that reminds me of a long time ago, the last public presser that Bonnie Henry did. Feels like it was ages ago. So she was presenting some stats on vaccination rates by practice or by field in healthcare worker settings, and I remember like And I remember thinking, like, okay, I guess that's information that's helpful to know. And then so many of the reporters who were at that presser got totally thrown, and they saw this rabbit to chase, and they chased the rabbit, and they were asking question after question about these stats. But a couple of reporters were like, okay, that's really interesting, but there's some bigger issues that we need to talk about. And I'm grateful for them, and I hope that we get to see more of that from our journalists.
Did they get answers?
No, I doubt it. I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, the BBC media has been a mess. And a lot of them would state, I believe, that, well, if we push too much, we don't get access. And their job is still to be the media.
That's not what journalism is.
Yeah.
That's not what the democracy is.
I agree. Okay,
I was born and raised in a country where we are taught to not trust the government, right? Mm-hmm. To expect a moron or somebody who's corrupt at the other end. So when we interact with the government, we don't just go and say, oh, okay, whatever you say. Yes. No. We go in expecting a fight. And if you get somebody who's knowledgeable and you actually manage to do the thing that you want to do, you're just pleasantly surprised. And that happens sometimes, not always. Greece has a very long history of people rioting in the streets, as in marching down the streets, right? I mean, things get burned too, but not every time. And I mean on like a weekly basis, because people understand that if you want something, you gotta keep asking for it. So if you have a question, you need to keep insisting on it and not, again, get distracted with whatever bullshit that's come on from the other direction. I don't see this here. I don't see people asking follow-up questions. And I don't know why.
Me neither. I wish I knew. I honestly feel like it's all of this is so obvious, but again, I recognize my privilege of sort of education, and a lot of the people around me have no experience in the sort of political engagement you're talking about, to be honest. We've had such a politically removed these generations, and having to actually get and fight for rights.
You have to register to vote in Canada, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in Greece, we don't have the right to vote. We have the duty to vote. You don't register to vote. No, you're born. You're registered as, you know, being born. You're a citizen. They know when you're 18. They expect you to show up. You're in the list. If you don't show up to vote when, you know, the next election is declared after you turn 18, there is a fine and there's a jail sentence associated with it. And the police will come and ask you where you've been. So unless you've been more than 400 kilometers away from your polling station, you're expected to show up, which gives, I think, citizens a completely different view of citizenship or citizenry. No, just the act of being a citizen. It's not something that you have to opt in.
Mm-hmm.
In Greece, you can't opt out of it, right? It's necessary for democracy to work that citizens participate in it actively.
Oh, you made such a beautiful point there of, yeah, that's so poignant, of the fact that as much as we're fighting from a stance almost of trying to get people to opt in to community, but in reality, we don't get that choice. And that's actually correct, is that we're all here together doing this and part of this community. And I think that's an excellent point you bring up about almost having those things that recognize the gravity of voting and how important it is and the responsibility we have to community and to democracy as well. And you can clearly see that that is not the case here, right? That we have just swaths of people that don't vote, that say, what's the point, that don't care, that don't even associate our hospitals failing with that, that don't associate any of what the problems that they have with that, that they can't buy groceries right now or any of that. They don't put any of those pictures together. A lot of people don't sort of have the training, experience, natural ability, natural, like any of the ability to put these pieces together. That's why they rely on the government, but the government is not doing that.
There's a lot of uneducated idiots who work. Vote in Greece. We had the fascists back in the parliament in 2011 because a lot of people thought it would be funny. It wasn't funny. It was scary. Mm-hmm. And 8 years down the line, there was a trial, and a lot of those people went to jail for a reason because people got killed. But still, I don't. Where? Why do people like that think hospitals collapse?
I don't know.
Is it like a natural phenomenon, like an earthquake?
I honestly think that when they have those thoughts, they push it away. And that's where we come back to what we were talking about right in the beginning, too, is that dissonance, right? That this is research bound, right? Like, we have so much to support this notion that people will change, you know, their thoughts to match the behavior that they're doing. So these people want to be in these social situations. They want to be out and doing these things. So they are actively sort of that dissonance. They are pushing it away. They are saying, well, no, I'm not hurting anybody. No, I'm not doing this. No, this isn't what's causing hospital collapses. So their perception of this entire experience for many of them is very different than us. That being said, there's some real asshatteries in this in this stuff, right? Like, and Henry's one of them. That woman knows what's going on.
Oh yeah, she's not an idiot,
right? This is we all knew it, right? When she wrote that book, many of us saw that. We saw that sort of predatory nature of her position, and we called it out then. But now, in the context of the history we've had for the last 2 years, I'm like, hell yeah, we called it out, right? Look at what she's done. Mel, what do you think?
It's a difficult conversation to have because there's so much, isn't the word, disillusionment, anger, frustration, grief attached to it. And perhaps this is why the cognitive dissonance, right? Because people don't want to have to do the difficult work. People will always choose the easiest route. And if the easiest route right now is to pretend that everything is awesome and the pandemic is over and you have FOMO because you see your friends YOLOing it up on their timeline, right? Maybe that is the easier choice right now. And I remember we had this dark thought a few episodes ago about lemmings. Do you remember that conversation about lemmings, about how the people just run off a cliff? They see the other ones doing the same without a care in the world.
Yeah, well, we as humans function as social creatures psychologically, right? We want to not feel outside of the group. That's a threat to us, even evolutionary, right? Like, to not be part of that group.
It's not that simple, you guys. Come on. I grew up in a hair salon. I have 8 hairdressers in my family. I'm an extrovert, okay? I hate lecturing, but I love lecturing because I, you know, when I did in front of 400 people, I got all this energy from all 400 people looking at me. It was addictive, but it's it goes beyond that, right? I have a disability I live with on a daily basis. I know what it's like to struggle to go through your day. Right. Mm. I know what it's like to have brain fog. I know what it's like to have physical pain. Because I've my entire family thinks I'm ridiculous and I don't care. But they are healthy. Okay. And I think most people who are healthy don't have the imagination, for whatever reason, to imagine themselves being unable to go through their day. I know for a fact I don't want to add long COVID to my daily struggle because I know how hard the day is for me right now.
If somebody doesn't even think about it, I guess it's hard to get. I mean, it's heartbreaking because the only way they can learn lacking imagination is through personal experience. But once they're brain damaged, they might not be able to go back to feeling normal again. And that is because we're talking about disability, and because I'm assuming everybody gets one, you know, life to live. It is absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I can't even explain this to people I love and who love me, and I'm not allowed to worry about them anymore.
I think
I don't know how you convince everybody else of this.
I think you're spot on. I think that sort of health privilege and medical ableism that's been well embedded in our medical institutions is a huge part of it, because chronic illnesses have been historically, you know, under-researched, have been stigmatized against, have been, you know, often in largely female populations or non-binary populations, and has not received the services and adequate sort of attention that it needs. And this has been a continuation of that and an extension of that. And yeah, I think you sort of sadly tapped into it. The fact that people simply can't imagine that it would be that much of a struggle. And I think that that's in a lot of what we're talking about now is people, a lot of people that recognized what was going on and fought against it were people that had previous struggles in this or other areas, whether it be disability or other sort of issues that they had dealt with. But I'm so reticent to say that you need to have experience to have fucking empathy. Like, how have we gotten to that place? Because it feels like that's where we're at. And how do I make someone have empathy? That's a pretty hard question.
Did we get to this place, or have we always been in this place?
Yeah.
It's just that, I mean, I didn't know the way. I mean, okay, I'm going to speak about my fellow Greeks. I did, because about last summer, about 50% of them were refusing to get vaccinated when I went back to Greece for a month and got my second shot there. I didn't know there were that many idiots in Greece walking about, because we have mandatory secondary education. And I had discussions with a lot of people and heard a lot of nonsense coming out of their mouths. It had nothing to do with reality. And I don't think that that is an outcome of us being locked up. Well, they weren't really locked up. Neither were Canadians. During COVID, I think this is just, I think it's a chronic underfunding of education, perhaps, and people just not being able to, not knowing how to determine, you know, how to differentiate stuff they read online, and now having easier and easier access to things online. And
oh, I think that's a huge part of it too, is that
this is depressing me.
Sorry. The proliferation of social media, right, is part of this picture in a way that we don't discuss as openly as we need to, and what's happened in all of the last sort of, you know, 5, 10, 15 years is that social media has escalated this so far beyond the point and helped these people in power just accentuate this across the globe now.
There's I started paying attention to Facebook and Twitter when this thing started, and it's interesting. You see the likes and just the reaction metrics on Facebook. You can see how many people find something funny or are angry about it or like it, and you can also, you know, scan the comments underneath something. And I saw this thing getting out of control progressively from the very beginning. And when I engaged with people in the beginning, I tried to, you know, help them find actual information and give them, you know, links to studies, and no one's interested, which is kind of why I kind of gave up, and I now just call people morons and block them. I don't know if you've noticed that, but I do that a lot. But it's gotten progressively worse as this thing
as the pandemic essentially progressed and as more and more people stayed indoors and engaged through social media and got exposed to all of this nonsense and was unable to filter out, you know, the obvious disinformation versus the data. And people don't understand that science is also something that's alive and it changes and it progresses as you get data in. And
well, many people don't want to accept that they were also struggling mentally. Like, the pandemic changed the situations for many people, but people don't like to recognize that. And unfortunately, I see that every day. Gemma, what's up?
Yeah, I think it's, I was just listening to Elena speaking about the frustration in trying to kind of like help dispel disinformation and inform people. And so something that a project that I'm working on that maybe might, I don't know how it's going to go, but this summer what I'm going to be doing is I did my vaccine ambassador training through Coursera a couple of weeks ago. It's a Johns Hopkins course. And right now I'm doing a contact tracing course through the Public Health Agency of Canada, and it's kind of outdated, but that's sort of beside the point. What I want to accomplish is I want to do a door knocking campaign where I just check in my neighborhood first and I get to meet people and introduce myself and just get an idea of like what everyone's understanding of the pandemic is right now and what they need help with. Because I think the last couple of years, it's been like, it's been so frustrating. And like, I would just yell at people and, you know, and like Lena, block people, which I still do because it's healthy. And so what I'm trying to do now as I get into the organizing aspect is asking more questions and trying to like figure out where people's heads are at. And like going back to that piece about empathy, which is like, I feel like I'm giving as much empathy as I can and not getting enough back from the people who really need to like put in the work to do it. Like my roommate, for example, who is like going to Hamilton this week. And I'm like, no, you're not. It's work and it's good practice for kind of like organizing and making myself known, and hopefully I get somewhere with it, but not everyone is going to respond positively to that. So I'm just going to see how it goes, but I thought I would share that, and maybe someone will think that maybe that's something that they would like to do in their neighborhood.
Look, our local fishmonger called me a brainwashed little robot who does not understand science. Who doesn't see that COVID was released by the Jews who also brought down the Twin Towers. At which point, I think I had a tiny little stroke. I did. His kid was there with him. He's 36. Oh. He has 5 children. He has chronic health conditions. We were in the water. I wasn't wearing my glasses. I didn't even recognize him when he started talking to me. And I think I made a comment about anti-vaxxers. And he went on this rant and I tried because I knew him. I know him for many years and it broke my heart. I mean, I don't care what he thinks about my intelligence. Because he finished high school and I have 3 degrees. But he doesn't care about the science. He doesn't want information. He already knows everything. My own brother is an anti-vaxxer. He has not been vaccinated. He refuses to get vaccinated. He refuses to talk about it. And it's not that I haven't tried. I did. So I don't, I mean, no, I wish you the best of luck, but maybe it's the Greek side of things where it's incredibly extreme. Or just my family. I hope you don't experience this.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's horrible. I'm so sorry that you were subjected to that. That is so wrong.
Well, and I think that it's hard, Gemma. And I think that we've all had times that we sort of struggle between having empathy and like struggling with the fact that we are surrounded in people that just aren't willing to take this information up even when it's presented to them, and it's like, but so obvious that would save lives, and how is this even a question, and like continuing to have to push for like basic protections so that our cancer patients don't die. Like, this seems just absurd to have to be doing it. and exhausting. And
one thing that's important to say here, it's not just about life or death. It's also about life, right? It's about having the ability to live as normal a life as possible. That's also part of someone's human right. So if you have a terminal cancer patient who needs to go into hospital and who is freaking out because they have to have an argument about what mask they should wear, right? And it keeps them up at night. That's not okay, right? It might not be the thing that will kill them, but it still affects their quality of life. And that's unacceptable.
Absolutely. And we've made a point throughout this pandemic, public health has, to just ignore social determinants of health and all the things that also like go into that. And the fact that some people are having to fight for these things more than others, right? And, you know, basic things that frustrate me, like John Horgan got his treatment without any sort of wait times in those places where they were mask mandated.
Of course he did.
But he ended it as soon as his treatment was done. He ended
those masks. Of course he did.
Right? And, like, how do you look at that and not just be like, what is going on? Right. But the research and like everything I do in my life tells me that, as sort of was identified by Lena earlier, narratives and personal experience are usually what actually changes people's mind. Sustained sort of exposure to narratives of these things, making it more neutral, making it, you know, less negative to them. And it's so exhausting because that's what all of us are doing all the time, essentially, right now, is trying to do that. And it's why we have these conversations. And I know we can't stay on too long tonight, so we'll probably go for another 5-10 minutes. But communicating and having that information and continuing to educate, it's exhausting for all of us. But we keep doing it in hopes that we'll bring people along because, and I don't want to be cynical or leave anybody, you know, feeling down on this, but when I'm even in my worst days of this, I would rather go down trying to make it better, trying to save lives of the intentionally ignored communities than just let this happen, even if it's going to happen, right? That the minimum I can do is at least go down fighting for all these people.
It's also important to say that there are ways to actually engage and do so safely, right? So if you have to travel, there are ways to do so safely.
Yeah.
I am trying to figure that out because I am intending on traveling in August, but we're not even talking about that apart from, you know, whatever bubble we're in on Twitter, where people agree that this thing is important.
Because having COVID is airborne as a loudly recognized thing among governments has still been difficult.
Not in BC. Has anybody had a positive experience where they've actually changed someone's mind? I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah. Where I kind of started with my organizing, because I'm not ready to jump into it just yet, partly because of funds. I started with my mother because the rest of my family lives in Ontario, which is where I was born. And I learned from my mother that she had wanted to take... Oh, is everything okay?
I just button mashed laughing and I just wanted to apologize. I'm not laughing at you being born in Ontario. No.
So my mother had tried to take my now 92-year-old grandmother out to like a salon for a pedicure for Mother's Day. And I was like, I don't want you to do that, to try doing that ever again. But that conversation happened over text message. And so then I thought about it and I messaged my dad and I said, are you okay with us like having like a little Zoom meeting where we can just sit and I can like, you can ask me some questions about transmission and I can try my best to answer them. And then my mom can also be there and we can kind of like have a conversation about it that like invites her to participate and she can ask questions and let me know what information she's been given without like attacking her or going like, you're wrong. And so he agreed to that, which was wonderful. And we got to sit down over the weekend and talk about it. And it helped her come around because both my parents went to university. They're kind of lifelong learners. They're very intelligent, but You know, sometimes people get in a way and they get complacent with the messaging they're receiving from public health. And so I tried to put in the extra time to put in some effort to for her and to let her know that, like, I'm doing this because I care about you and you have done so much to protect me while raising me. And I want to return the favor somehow. And when I framed it that way, I think it made a difference and it kind of caught her off guard. She was like, oh. So that's what I did, and then I'm gonna see how that approach continues to work with other people that I approach.
That's wonderful to hear. Thanks for sharing that.
I would say that I've had success getting my relatively not academically or educated grandfather. So he was he worked in the school system as a custodian for his whole life in BC Ed. He sort of watches what I do and he trusts me in the sense that he knows, like, I'm working really hard and I have him very educated, and he listened to me when I talked to him sort of about masks, and then when I kept talking to him, he eventually asked me to sort of mail him some to BC. So now he's wearing N95 masks when he goes about in the grocery stores and stuff like that. Because I tried to, as Gemma said, sort of have this non-confrontational. It was like, I just really love you and, like, don't want to lose you. And that really scares me. And, you know, I sort of did it in that way. And, you know, he's listened, and you know, the rest of my family doesn't necessarily wear N95s. My husband does, and my children. But even at work, right, like, every opportunity I have, I'm wearing my N95. And when people ask me about it, I will make comments that COVID is airborne. Like, and it's never confrontational. I'm sort of just adding these things into everyday conversations that I have regularly. Like, some people are picking it up and some people go read. Like, these websites have been really helpful because it's often something I can send to people and they can get, like, a visual of something or a little piece of data that speaks to them. And having this all in one place helps sort of people get that bigger picture, which is part of the problem is people are having difficulty seeing that and the application to themselves, which I know all of us wish that it didn't require them needing it to be impacting themselves for them to want to do anything. But for a lot of people, that is unfortunately the way that it works. Mel, what are you thinking? You want to get close to wrapping up here?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for joining us tonight. It's so nice to actually speak and hear the people's voices that we've been interacting with online for so long. Just thank you so much. And I don't know, I think it's important to have these types of conversations, because if we don't have these types of conversations, then nothing ever really gets moving forward the way that we want it to move forward, right? And so we must keep pushing and we must keep talking about it. Yeah.
Gotta go do mommy stuff.
Yes. Yeah, yes, I do.
And Mel and I are going to keep holding these every Saturday at this time, sort of whether people attend or not. We're going to just sort of do live recordings now so that people can pop in and out. And I'll sort of keep updating any big things on the hospital. I do want to say before we end today that there is going to be that Clearwater closure in their emergency department starting tomorrow at 5 p.m. until Monday at 7 a.m. That's, again, their 12th closure since April 2022. If you know anybody in that area, please give them that information, because there's not going to be emergency services sort of available for people, unfortunately, again.
I wonder if that's actually affecting excess deaths down the line.
Oh, 100%.
But are we going to get data like that? That's what I was thinking yesterday. If you have no, I mean, people keep on having heart attacks and strokes and falling down and breaking stuff, right?
So, in their 50s and 60s, we have so many deaths now that we didn't used to have in that age range.
I broke my arm when I was 38. I ended up in the, you know, really busted, and I ended up at VGH for 6 hours. If you don't have that option, what do you do? Because you can't, even if it's just a broken, shattered wrist, you can't just nurse that for 24 or 36 hours.
Well, we will see, unfortunately. What will happen is the way we've seen it in other places is it's going to be our most ignored communities that die first, right? Because they will not be able to sort of have the workarounds for that. But whether they're just not reporting that. I expect people are dying at home. They're not testing them. The Public Health Agency of Canada will eventually get numbers, but BC's been like holding back from reporting a lot of the info to even them at this point. So I don't know.
It makes sense to FYI that data.
So I think we could, but whether they'll give it is another question. They are at this point just completely tyrannical over the BC data. And they're not even sending it to Public Health Agency of Canada. So they don't even have a record of sort of...
How is that legal?
I don't know. I truly don't know.
That's how I want to know. Like, is this... Like, well, how are we getting funding and stuff from the federal government if their BC government's not doing their part?
Because they got so many fucking problems right now. It's the least of their concerns.
But it's still... But is it illegal? Because... If it is, maybe there's something that can be done about it. I just don't know. That's the thing. I'm not a lawyer.
I don't know either. That's something we can look into for sure. Maybe we'll talk about that next week, Mel. We'll take a look at that and then we can talk about it next week.
That sounds good.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Thanks for hosting us,
guys.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Oh, thank you.